This is the Techno Buffet Podcast, episode number 667, recorded Wednesday, February 28th, 2024, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Tell me that you don't want me to cut that and replace it with something else, that I can leave that in.
You can leave it in.
Okay. So welcome to another episode of the Techno Buffet Podcast. I am still in Bulgaria. At least it looks like Bulgaria. We are recording at 9 p.m. Unfortunately, since that's Bulgaria time, Jerry is forced to record earlier in the day when we get to see afternoon Jerry instead of evening Jerry.
Yes, it is afternoon. It is 2 p.m. on the East Coast.
So another fun week has passed here in Bulgaria. I'm leaving at the end of the week and heading slowly back towards New York. I told them that I would stay one or two extra days, but I wanted to, after this weekend, not spend another weekend away from home. So we'll see if they accommodate me there. But on Sunday, I got to go on the tour that I took 4 years ago, the free Sofia, Bulgaria walking tour, which was, of course, you know, over 2 hours of fun Sofia facts. It's surprising how many facts about Sofia I remembered after 4 years. But I'll ask you, how many King Boris III stories do you know?
I'm going to go with zero.
Okay. That would be the last king of Bulgaria.
Oh. I don't know any Bulgarian stories.
I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. King Boris III, there is a church in Sofia that they tried to assassinate him in by killing a general so that he would attend the funeral, and then they wired the church with TNT. And they did blow it up, and they did kill a lot of people and wound a lot of people, but he escaped unharmed because he was late, because he was attending another funeral. Apparently, his driver and bodyguard, who apparently got shot protecting him from a different assassination attempt. So the same guy saved his life twice, once by dying and the other by having his funeral run late.
That's kind of funny.
There are a lot of not funny things about King Boris III. He allegedly was poisoned by Hitler.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm saying allegedly. There's no real historical proof of that, but there are people who apparently still think that. And his son is still alive. After he was poisoned, his son technically would be the heir, except he was too young to achieve the throne, and by the time he was old enough, the monarchy had been deposed, and he ended up living in Spain. That would be Simeon II.
That's where I'd go to live.
Well, he came back to Bulgaria. He was prime minister, apparently, for a few years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also learned about how Emperor Constantine liked to hang around here. This is where he had, like, his, his vacation home.
His vacation home.
Well, it's nicer than Istanbul, I guess, or at the time, Constantinople. There were some hot springs here, They came here for the hot water. I'm simplifying history, but lots of interest. The Romans showed up here for the same reason. There are a bunch of hot springs. Because usually when the Romans established a city, there was like a river or a port or something important. Here it was, this is where they could, go and enjoy the hot springs. Because why not?
Sure, why not?
Anyway, as I said, learned a lot. Other than that, not much exciting on the Bulgarian front. I work, I come back to the hotel room, I putter around on my computer. I deal with the fact that the time that I want to watch television is the same time everybody else wants to watch television. So occasionally it stutters a bit, and I go to bed and repeat it. And hopefully my time here ends up being thought of as productive. Because we've established that all the people here would like me to spend more time with them. Remember, they haven't seen me in 4 years, and they have questions. So that's what's going on here, but let's see what's going on in the world. So that's what we call a segue. I'm still working on those. Over a decade after we started the show, I still occasionally have the awkward segue.
Sure, but you have a segue, which is cool.
Yeah. So Google Maps is apparently making glanceable directions widely available. So the idea is that it would provide real-time ETA and turn-by-turn directions in the route preview. And this has sort of been my annoyance when I sort of want to glance at the directions, but I don't necessarily need to navigate all the way there. And that's usually when I'm taking a walk. When you're driving a car, sometimes maybe you want Google to constantly be monitoring things and saying, maybe you should, take the next right. As opposed to when you're walking, where generally that is not something that you would do. Stare at your phone. You really just want to know where do I turn?
Right. And it's nice that you don't have to unlock it anymore.
Yeah. And I actually was using Google Maps to navigate when I walked from here to the Palace of Justice.
To what?
The Palace of Justice. That's the name of the building. Now, I sort of like that name. In America, do you know what they call it?
No.
The courthouse.
Okay. That's where I'll buy that. Sure.
Yeah. That's where the walking tour started. Nothing. I wasn't going there for court. It's just the walking tour starts on the side, meets up on the steps of the courthouse. So I went over there to take the walking tour. But I had been there years ago, but I had stayed at a different hotel last time, so I didn't know how to walk there from here. So I went and used Google Maps to walk around. And of course, I've been watching the cab drivers who've been taking me from here to the office I'm working at for last week and this week are also using Google Maps to get there. But clearly it isn't helping because I think some of them are trying to kill us.
Whoa.
Some of them are really dangerous drivers.
Yeah.
Not everybody. It's just today, for some reason, I had two people who drove in a taxi who drove me from here to the office who just seemed to, those people who they drive in the lane where cars park and then they drive really fast towards a parked car and then they suddenly dart into traffic and then out of traffic and then they drive on the trolley tracks. And,
okay.
That was my driver this morning.
Wow.
So that's not typical here. Usually there are other places where I've been more scared of the way that the people chose to drive, but one of those things. Anyway, but everybody seems to be using Google Maps for navigation. So glanceable directions. I would have found them useful this weekend, and I hope that they finish rolling it out so I could enjoy it.
Cool.
Yeah. The people over at Google wrote a post, 6 Android experiences to see at Mobile World Congress Barcelona. So I thought I would just sort of go over. They have the circle to search, which I have not yet used. I don't quite get it. Draw a circle on the screen to search for things. Take the picture perfect shot with best take on the Pixel 8 and 8 Pro, which is, again, their AI-powered Google Photos feature that helps you create a group photo. You can use the Pixel Phone's dual screen interpreter mode in action. Interpreter mode has not worked well every time I've tried it because whoever I'm trying to interpret with just laughs hysterically at the poor translation. It's not that the words are wrong, it's more the usually the grammar.
Right.
Give new Android Auto features a spin. So apparently they will have a car where you can experience new messaging features like using AI, because every announcement has to use AI for something.
Absolutely. I don't know what
for. It has to automatically summarize large text and suggest relevant replies. Then tune into a discussion on AI, because we can't just use AI. We have to talk about it with essentially the CEO of DeepMind and apparently Stephen Levy, the editor of Wired. Also how McLaren's F1 racing team uses Google technology, but it doesn't say they use AI. So years ago when the buzz thing was cloud, I remember attending a lecture where somebody just started it out. Cloud, 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 cloud. And then he said, now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's actually have a serious discussion about something. I really appreciated that point. Anyway, Chromecast with Google TV apparently has an update rolling out for fast pairing and an audio output switcher. I'm a little confused about that. Where am I switching my audio output to from my Google TV?
I don't know.
Maybe I'm switching it to the Bluetooth device that I'm fast pairing.
Maybe.
I suppose I'll find out, because there's one place where I did actually hook up Bluetooth headphones to a Google TV where I wanted to be able to mute the sound. But I'm curious to see how that works out. If you, by some chance, happen to be a subscriber to the Funimation digital library system, apparently they are getting rid of people's digital libraries. So they bought something, were given a digital copy, and now that digital copy is being erased. But apparently Sony, who owns the property, has essentially said that they are going to work really hard directly with each affected customer to ensure they have value for what they got in the digital copy initially. So apparently when the spokesperson was asked what appropriate value means, the response was, it could be they get access to a digital copy on any of the existing other services where they could access it. It could be a discount access to our subscription service they can access to it. And they are potentially trying to make it right, but apparently they can't actually say how. So this is sort of that thing that I think I've mentioned over and over on the years. If you buy a digital copy of something that you do not have, that you don't have on your local drive, they can take it away at any time, and they're under no obligation under their license to do anything. So they shouldn't call it buying. Buying suggests something completely different.
I agree.
But I do appreciate that they've said they're going to try to do something, but they really should. Before they announce that they're going to delete everybody's account, you think that they should have that something publicly decided. Instead of saying, we're going to just talk to people individually and decide what's right for them. Why don't you give them three choices and let them decide what's right for them? Why not? Why do you seem to want to say that you're going to just informally talk to everybody so nobody knows what anybody else got? One individual apparently at The Verge reported that their experience trying to receive the appropriate value for their digital copies of two items, and apparently they responded with two emails that apologized but offered no solution or compensation, and has yet to receive a response with their follow-up of, didn't you guys say you were going to talk to us, or did you just tell the media you were going to talk to us? Especially since the customer in question was, in fact, also the media. Anyway, disappointing. Also, this interestingly, the people at The Verge this week apparently are doing a series of articles about physical media. So apparently I'm not the only one who believes that physical media might be something worth having some of.
It is important, gosh darn it.
Well, I was sort of disappointed to when last week we were talking about that Disney is essentially transferring all of its physical media production over to Sony. Not that I'm disappointed that they've decided that they're going to continue to produce physical media, even if they're licensing it out to somebody else to do. But I can't say that that means that I feel comfortable about the future of the medium if they feel that they have to outsource their entire media division because it isn't worth them to run it themselves. But anyway, we'll see what happens. If you are interested in ATSC 3.0, which is the next generation of over-the-air television, apparently they have made changes in their DRM protocol to allow for networked devices such as the HD Home Run or the Tableau. Except for the fact that nobody has built on this new specification, so it is still vaporware.
Of course.
By the way, I decided not to try an ATSC 3.0 tuner through HD Home Run, a company that I do own a tuner from, because if with DRM, it would be essentially useless, even though half of the New York stations already migrated over to the new standard. We'll see what happens, but I don't understand why if you care about broadcast television, why you wouldn't want to support a device from the most enthusiastic people in your medium. People who bought HD Home Runs and similar devices are very enthusiastic about broadcast television. If you are a user of the Home Assistant OS system, and I do a native install of Home Assistant, but if you use the OS, which is their recommended way of doing it, they are going to be in the version that's scheduled to be released shortly. They're going to add support for the Raspberry Pi 5. And they've made a bunch of other improvements.
Nice.
Well, you know that I've given up on the Pi. I like the idea of the Pi, but it's at the point where you can get a mini PC for a comparable price.
Yeah.
So give it between getting a Pi 5 and then if I want to make sure it's reliable, now that I can add an NVMe SSD to it so that it's not using a micro SD card, which is the most fragile part of the Pi,
yep,
to boot or to store data, then I need an NVMe hat. Whereas meanwhile, I'm not saying that the SSD and the other things that come with some of the cheap mini PCs are the best quality, but I can get essentially a complete computer running Windows that I could wipe the Windows installation off of because I don't need that, install Linux and use as a very simple Home Assistant or otherwise server for $100. And definitely that'll have more staying power than the Pi. So I honestly think the Pi Foundation like missed the boat there. They lost me. Not that I'm against the Pi, I'm just saying the world has moved on. Do you know how powerful an N100 is, which is the latest sort of, it's not really Celeron anymore, but the latest sort of low power mini PC chip?
No.
Well, I'll give you an example. The N100, according to, we'll just use the CPU benchmark for it, because that's sort of, at least that's an objective number. The N100 has a CPU mark of about 5600. It has 4 cores and 4 threads. So not necessarily we're not going to say a speed demon.
Right.
That's faster than a lot of computers I've had over the years. For example, I'm running a laptop that's a few years old on my trip. And that laptop, let's see, what does that actually have? I can't even remember the chip in here. The chip in here is an i5-8250. So it's, if I look up the benchmark for that chip, which is again an i5, which means again, it has a lot more advantages than an N100, but an i5-8250, which was released in 2017, and I would have gotten it, I think I got this computer like as a returned model, floor model that I essentially, that had no hard drive that I sort of branded. Right. That one is a 895 with also four cores but 8 threads. So essentially, I'm able to, for $100, get a complete computer that has a essentially the same basic power as a few years old top of the line one. That's how fast these things sort of advance. And for something like Home Assistant, which doesn't need that much power, that's overkill. But why not? What do you think, Jerry?
I wish that we could get to where Raspberry Pis were back to $30 or $40 instead of almost 100.
And I really wish they'd put in it. I really wish the 5 had included, let's say, an eMMC slot where you could just essentially stick your memory instead of the microSD, and then the option to have a conversion to get an NVMe SSD. I think that would have really changed the game.
Give it a real hard drive from the start?
Well, eMMC is not necessarily a full real hard drive, but at least it would be memory that has some longevity to it.
Sure. Not as easy to swap out, though, like an SSD card.
Well, no. If you look at the ODroid, they actually do allow you to swap out the eMMC. Let me just see here. So the ODroid line has a eMMC module that you can put onto it. So essentially, there is a slot for it.
Right, but at that point, if you remove power, I mean, is that something that you can swap out like an SD card easily enough?
Yeah, but it has an actual, instead of it being, you know, one of those cards, it has an actual slot on the board and it's more reliable. Or even if you sprung for the for essentially an actual NVMe slot on the Pi 5 instead of having it be an optional add-on. Anyway, a few other things. Android 15 apparently is starting to become available with its first build. So the preview build, again, apparently has some interesting features.
Interesting.
Android 15 is, of course, designated vanilla ice cream. And includes things like notification cooldowns that lower the volume of incoming notifications when you get a bunch of successive notifications from the same app.
Nice.
I like that one. A separate toggle for keyboard vibration.
Nice.
Partial screen recording as opposed to full screen recording.
Interesting. Odd, but okay. Sure, why not?
Why you'd want that, because again, multitasking while it's available in Android isn't exactly there. An actually useful Bluetooth tile.
Wow.
Well, remember, they had a very useful Wi-Fi toggle, then they merged it with cellular, and it's a little less useful, but apparently now, if you long press on the Bluetooth tile, you get the same sort of thing that you've gotten from the internet tile, the ability to do some basic changing of networks, or in the case of the Bluetooth one, pairing of devices. Better optimization and a few other things. So we'll see what happens with that as it moves from a preview into something a little more stable, because I'm sure they'll have some other things on there. Apparently, Google's new sign-in page is official.
I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, I just don't think it's that interesting. If you look at, I just looked at the pictures that they showed in this article and sort of, okay, why do I care about this? Why'd they bother? It doesn't seem like that much of a excitement. It's, they want a more modern look. Okay. Good for them.
Well,
apparently, good. Yeah. Last week, apparently 70,000 AT&T customers were without service.
I heard about this, but I don't know any details. What happened?
They're apparently claiming that it had to do with some sort of software update, last I heard. But again, it's gone back and forth about what it is, because you know how companies are never necessarily forthcoming about these things.
Yep.
They begrudgingly admit it. But it looks like it was some sort of infrastructure software upgrade. As in, they updated something and it suddenly like broke everything.
Well, that sucks.
Yep. Fortunately, I'm not an AT&T customer, and even if I was, I wasn't in the right country to have this problem. The Google Pay app is apparently shutting down, so I don't know what goes on there. First, Google Wallet. Then Google Wallet shuts down in favor of Google Pay. Then Google brings back Google Wallet, and now they're getting rid of Google Pay. I better go look to see if I have anything in my Google Pay account. I don't think I do. But...
Interesting.
Yeah, I did enjoy Droid Life's comment on the subject.
Which was?
So this would be Tim from Droid Life who commented, someone ping the killed by Google people. We have a new tombstone to start carving. They're the people who have that website with the tombstones about all the Google services they shut down.
Okay, gotcha.
Bitwarden and added in an autofill option inside form field. So this is similar to other password managers where they have an option where you can have a little symbol inside your form field that if you click it, it'll display your credentials. So that's similar to, let's say, what LastPass has done. The difference is I find this one a little less obtrusive, but it's an option if you want it, and you can turn it on, turn it off, what have you. If you follow Home Assistant, apparently there is a live stream scheduled for tomorrow, February 29th, at 8 p.m. GMT, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. They're going to be essentially introducing some sort of project called Grace, named after Grace Hopper.
Interesting.
Yes. I assume you're familiar with Grace Hopper.
I am. She's the character. Yeah. Yes.
Something you would know a lot about. But either way, I'm assuming this has something to do with some sort of voice thing. Even though the year of the voice is over, I'm assuming if Home Assistant names something Grace, it might be some sort of voice assistant to give some personality, but I don't know. I am curious to find out who Grace is, what Grace is, or what have you tomorrow.
Yep. Maybe it's a new programming language for Home Assistant. Like Lua, but not. Maybe we'll be able to write automations in something that is not YAML.
We'll find out.
I mean, probably not, but
I did actually enjoy the comment that somebody made on the blog post, which is I'm pretty sure they're replacing YAML with COBOL.
That's funny.
But anyway, jokes aside, we'll see what happens. We'll talk about it next week, assuming I don't collapse in a heap after getting off the plane. Anyway, moving along, the FCC will vote on the all-in pricing for cable TV. So we've talked about that before, that they've proposed that advertisements should include everything the same way that airline tickets do. And it's the same basic philosophy. The reason that they did it for airline tickets was they said that it's not a sales tax. It's impossible for a consumer to understand without the taxes exactly how much the real cost of an item is. As well as the practice of listing additional costs as a tax for your surcharge. So the idea being that some of them are actually government imposed, but some of them are surcharges that are imposed by the cable company themselves. So how can you say it's not part of your price if you're the one imposing it? Do you have a choice about not paying it? Wow. So yeah, the idea is that they should be required to advertise all-in pricing. And their counter argument was there are just so many different prices based on different municipalities that it would be impossible to do this. That's by the way, that's true,
but not well, for an individual.
Well, no, the thing is, I should be able to, let's say, go on to Spectrum, for example, put in my zip code and have them tell me what the prices are for my zip code. If they're telling me that they can't, that their advertisements, because they play in too many markets, can't be as clear, okay, fine. But should I have to go through a whole bunch of hoops and not get a clear answer before I sign up of what the price would be in my area, I think that's unreasonable. And I think they should be forced to actually tell me what the price is up front, even if I have to tell them where I am.
Yes. Yeah. I think telling them where you are should enable them to give you a decent price.
Yeah, and I shouldn't have to tell them my block. I should be able to do it by zip code. Zip code tells, you know, what neighborhood I'm in, which should allow them to figure out what my actual tax burden is if they're saying part of it is not them. The Amazon Echo ecosystem released the Echo Hub, which apparently is a control panel. But if you look at the picture, it looks like a Nest Hub. It even is called a hub.
That's funny.
So essentially, they're copying Google, except for the fact that Google has not actually released a Nest Hub upgrade in how many years now?
Is that legal?
What?
I just kind of figured, I imagine that they would have some sort of trademark.
Well, there are different. No, I'm saying there are differences. I'm just saying it looks similar to a Nest Hub. It has a similar philosophy to it. Remember, it is this display device where the emphasis is controlling devices over, not that it can't do video playback, but over video playback. But a lot of the features, I would love to see this on an equivalent Nest successor. So it's powered by a USB-C power adapter. It can be powered over Ethernet. It has Zigbee Thread, Bluetooth LE, and Amazon Sidewalk radios in it. So essentially, it's similar to the Echo Show 8, which has, again, some of the same basic features, but it doesn't have, since that device is more for media consumption, this again is emphasizing essentially smart home devices. So there's a clock instead of advertising things to you. It can be mounted on the wall. Again, this is the sort of thing I'm surprised that Google, who had a head start in this sort of aspect of personal devices, isn't trying to compete on. Because Amazon was focusing on media consumption over interaction. So they're taking a big bite out of sort of what Google was focused on. Either way, I have another smart voice assistant that I'm investing in. If you watch the year of the voice things from Home Assistant, they were talking about the ESP32 S3 Box 3.
Right.
That they were using. They were briefly in stock on Amazon for like 5 minutes. So I put in an order and now they're unavailable again, but mine haven't shipped. So it's possible I won't get any, but I wanted to try one. And of course, finally, apparently, Tubi, Pluto TV, and the Roku channel are some of the most watched streaming services. So once again, we mentioned this last week, but I wanted to ask, because I forgot to ask this as we wrapped up last week. How many people listening to us watch Tubi, Pluto TV, or the Roku channel? I'm curious. No, I'm not criticizing it. I'm saying, are a lot of people watching it? Clearly, the stats say yes, but I wanted to hear some anecdotal information. What do people watch on the Roku channel, Pluto TV, and Tubi? And I'm saying this as someone who knows someone who wrote a screenplay that was turned into a production on Tubi. Knows as in, I was very surprised to hear that that happened.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of this week. Hopefully this will be my last week reporting in from GMT Plus 2. I'm looking forward to returning to GMT Minus 5. Well, I don't know.
Thank you very much for staying up so that we can continue.
It's only 9 local, not that bad, but To be honest, I'm not very good at changing my sleeping patterns. So by the time I get used to the change in time zone 100%, it's not always time to turn around. I'm out of practice. It's been 4 years since I did a 7 hour time difference. You have to work up to that. Start with a 1 hour time difference. And unlike some other people, I can't just take my shoes off and dig my toes into the carpet.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I survive. I found out where I can buy massive amounts of caffeinated soda.
That's important.
Yeah. Only cost me two leva.
To what?
Bulgarian lev. The
Oh.
local. That's about rounding to the nearest even number. That's about it's like 50 cents to the lev.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so essentially a 2 liter bottle of name brand diet soda for only a buck. Not bad. You can get a personal pizza for $3. And since I have a stove, I've just been raiding the local supermarket, which I can also get in the US because it's a little, which is expanding into the United States. They're opening one in my neighborhood too. Although everybody told me I should go to the Bulgarian supermarket instead. Better selection. Anyway, so until next week, when there's a 50% chance I will be in my own home, and there's a 50% chance that I will be held over at my intermediate. Because I told them if they wanted me to spend one extra day stopping on the way back, I would be happy to do it. But no one said anything. So I'm assuming that maybe I'll be able to go home when I plan on We'll see.
Good,
So
man.
hopefully once I get home, I will have some more home automation stuff to talk about. Oh, I did forget one thing. I sent some parts to my home in my absence. I've decided to try to get my Ender 3v2 3D printer working again because it's been idle for the last year.
Ooh.
But I honestly think that the Ender 3v2 is a lemon.
Really?
Well, no, because everybody else I talked to who bought a 3D printer that was not an Ender said that they didn't have to do as much tinkering as I have had to do with the Ender 3v2 to get it to just work out of the box.
It is was kind of unusual.
It is a budget item, but that's a thing. Maybe I should have spent more the money that I spent on upgrades and bought one that required very little tinkering.
Well, that's kind of the thing, though, is even though it's
I thought
budget,
it
it
was
should
exciting to
work
tinker.
relatively decent out of the box. But as I recall, you had nothing but issues.
Maybe it's me.
Could be.
No, I'm accepting the possibility it might be me, and I know, you look at all these people online who are saying, well, no, you have to get this upgrade immediately and you should get that upgrade. And other people are saying, well, just use the thing as it came out of the box before you start putting in new toys. And the thing is, I thought, a tinkerer's device, I like to tinker. But I also bought a 3D printer to print stuff.
Yep.
So it's sort of the so I have some parts that have been sitting there, and I ordered two additional parts. Namely, I ordered something to replace one piece that kept clogging. And I ordered something to try to get to replace a problem with the bed. And I am prepared to order. I hear the new thing is magnetic build plates
Yep.
with what's EI. I haven't, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I considered doing that because it seems to be something that makes it easier to get the print off of the plate. And I know I had some trouble with that.
Yeah, you
But
can if you just snap or bend the plate, pull the plate off and bend it, and it snaps right off.
that sounded like something I was willing to do, but I figured let me print something and have trouble taking it off before I get that.
But
But I also.
actually, with PEI, you can really just let it cool down and it should self-release.
Yeah. I figured I would stick with the stock plate until I got things printing again, and then I'll think about whether or not I want to put something on top of it. But the other thing is, I need, because the tube, was it the Bowden tube? I was with that, my terminology, has been idle for so long, I figure like I need to replace that length of tubing.
Probably not.
Well, no, it was clogged when I stopped using it. Probably going to be hard to get it back. I would probably have to preheat it and then shove something through it to get all the stuff out of it from the last clog.
Oh, in which case you must be using the wrong terminology, because that statement does not make sense for a Bowden tube.
I don't know. Somehow I got the whole thing messed up.
All right. As well, good luck.
I think the problem was that I messed a bunch of things up while trying to get fixed something else. So I may be wrong about exactly what happened with it, but it looked like essentially some of the filament actually melted in there. So I'll see if I can get it out. But I think it's because I tried to adjust the thing too many times. But I figure if I can get it as close back to stock as possible, maybe I can do a reset on getting it working. Then after update the firmware, because I hear that they've fixed some stuff there, and then try to get all the settings set correctly. But my goal is to make it so that I can just put in a file and have it print something and not have to worry that there's going to be a problem. Or that I'm going to end up with a whole bunch of half-melted filament all over my floor. And again, you know I don't know what I'm doing, or else I would have succeeded at this now. But I'll keep trying. I even took your advice. I bought hairspray. I'm going to use hairspray other than that.
That works really well for glass.
Yeah, but the one I have is glass. But
well, then good.
Yeah, but anyway, there's also the possibility that's worked, because Creality has apparently not necessarily the best reputation for build quality on some components. So I've been sitting here in Sofia watching YouTube videos on how people fixed Ender 3 V2s. And if I fail to get this thing working reliably, then it's what is the current beginner 3D printer that you can get that doesn't require you to spend as much time tinkering?
I don't know.
I guess I'll find out if this doesn't work out. But I'm going to give it a go, because I have the thing, I put money into the thing, and I'd like to see if I can actually get a useful print out of it.
I would like to see that too.
Because I got a bunch of stuff out of it, but it's just like it continually just kept requiring constant recalibration. So I bought that whole thing with the automatic bed leveling so that I wouldn't have to constantly think, you know, try to adjust that. I just wanted to press a button and have it print something. That shouldn't be so hard.
I would agree.
Yeah. So if somebody has a recommendation, if I give up on the Ender 3 V2 and give it to a beloved relative that maybe I don't like so much, well, actually, maybe they won't like me so much after I give it to them, if it's been that much trouble for me, then what would be the easy thing that would actually just print stuff for me with a minimum of fuss, where I can go online, find a file that somebody else designed, put it into the thing, hit a button, and have it just go.
Bamboo, I'm not saying that's on carbon, but that's not cheap.
I'm not looking for, okay, let me put this here. I am not looking for a luxury item, but I am willing to spend more than I spent on the Ender 3 V2 if I'm going to not end up with another lemon. So what's like the budget model that does not have that level of frustration?
I think you're not going to get what you're looking for. You can set up Prusas, have very low need to tinker, and Bamboo will have you straight out of the box, or should. But beyond that,
yeah. I just want to see if anybody has any opinions. I'm not talking about not spending more than the Ender 3 V2. I'm just saying I'm not sure if I want to spend $1,000.
I get it.
So there has to be a middle ground between the $200 I spent on the Ender 3v2 and something else. So what is the middle ground between, let's say, 200 and 1,000? Not mathematically. What models are in the mid-range? So I'm going from the low end to the mid-range in terms of what I'm looking for. And if it doesn't come from the people of Creality, I'd probably be happy too at the moment. Because I'm not happy with them right now.
Sure. Creality is that budget brand. Realistically.
Yeah. I know it's that budget brand. I'm just saying maybe there's a new Creality out there. They have to compete with the other people also. Maybe the new ones aren't so prone to frustration. But I haven't looked in a while because I left the thing alone. But now I want to print a new knob for something because I called the company and they want $10 for the knob and another $10 to ship it to me.
Wow.
Well, not only that, I said, well, I have another one of these things that I think is going to break. Can I order two knobs? They said no.
What do you mean no?
They said they're low in knob stock, so they are limiting it to one knob per. The fact that they are low on knob stock and they're limiting it to one knob per customer suggests that a lot of people's knobs are breaking, which suggests that they didn't make a very good knob. But I looked online and somebody actually did design a replacement knob that you can stick on this thing. So what I want is the ability to print knobs on demand.
Interesting.
How is that interesting? If I had to pay $20 for my first knob and I have to wait until another one breaks and then talk them into giving me another knob and hoping they have it, and I have five of these things that all have knobs, because not only did I buy one for myself, but I recommended it to relatives because I liked it so much, except for the knob. And at least there have been two additional knob breakages since then, since the original knob order that I made. And short of me keeping a pair of pliers next to the thing so that I could turn the knob, I would like to figure out something.
Sure. So
that inspired me to think about getting the printer working again. To print knobs for my toilet.
Yeah, man, it's just strange.
What, that I need a knob for my toilet?
No, that they want to limit it to one per. It's just like, really? Because
they said they had supply issues.
And I get that, but whatever.
There's a run on knobs. I don't get it either, but other than that, the object works perfectly.
Yep.
But I'm not gonna buy an entirely new bidet for my toilet just because the knob broke.
And you shouldn't.
I agree with you. But if a knob costs $20 and a replacement bidet costs $90, that's not really a financial. Apparently, a large percentage of the cost of a bidet is the knob. Who knew?
Okay.
We learn something new every day, don't we?
Yep.
So for anybody who is really embedded in the 3D printer space, if you do have an opinion on that, what's the sort of, I'm going to say, what are the options in the not at the lower end of the spectrum that might be less frustrating than the Ender I have? Or if you have any suggestions about what I should do with the Ender other than lift it up and throw it out the window, which is what I sometimes feel like doing with it, feel free to share. And if there are any technical terms you wish to share on this, like how you would suggest I go about figuring out how to make this thing work, again, with a minimum amount of maintenance once I reconfigure it so that it just does what I want it to, then I would appreciate any thoughts anybody has.
Sure. I would be interested as well.
And it may be that I just don't know what I'm doing. I'm willing to accept that.
What? No.
No, I know about a lot of things, but maybe 3D printing is beyond me. Or maybe, you know, years ago, there was something I didn't understand. And then I had a conversation with somebody and they said something to me that put it all in perspective. Not about 3D printing, about a different topic. And from then on, I felt like I understood it.
Cool.
So maybe I'm missing like that, those one or two critical bits of explanation that none of the explanations I've been given have given me, that would just make all of the other stuff that I've read or otherwise looked at make sense. How do we know that one of our listeners is not the person who's going to be that for me?
I don't know that.
That's my point. So we'll see what happens.
Yes, sir.
So is that a sufficient cliffhanger on which to end this week's episode? I'll be looking for your emails or your lack of email.
All right.
Well, I was hoping to hear like from the old timers, like, you know, we haven't heard from the Door-to-Door Geek in a while. We haven't heard from Daryl. I don't know. Does Daryl 3D print?
I don't know.
If he does, then maybe he has some advice. So until next time, Jer.
Until next time. Bye, folks. Good night.